everybody. Welcome into the Lake Show. Matthew Collar here in for Henry Lake, taking a little bit of a break from my day job covering the Minnesota Vikings at Purple Insider. And let me tell you, I've had a lot to talk about recently with rumors about Aaron Rodgers and reports that the Vikings are considering signing Aaron Rodgers. And every single day, it seems like there's a new, different version of whether the Vikings are actually in on Aaron Rodgers or not in on Aaron Rodgers. So in about a half an hour, I'll talk with Will Parkinson of Turn On the Jets, a Jets podcaster, about whether he thinks it's a good idea for the Vikings to sign Rodgers, what he's got left in the tank if the Vikings were to do it, and what that fit would be like. So we'll do that in about 20-25 minutes or so. And I'll talk about it a little bit more as well, because it's fascinating how just one report that the Vikings are considering it has taken over an offseason that's been incredibly exciting and fascinating for the Vikings, and they're going to introduce some of their new free agents to the media tomorrow on Zoom calls. I'm sure the guys are strewn about the country, so we'll be able to connect with them, get to know Jonathan Allen and Ryan Kelly and Will Fries and all these new players. But I did want to start the show with a little bit on the big story of the day here in town. Now, I will admit that my head is always in football, and I do a really great job of putting on horse blinders and ignoring uncomfortable stories. But when it comes to this senator getting arrested for the prostitution thing, that actually I have at least a perspective on, because I was a juror once in a case regarding Bloomington prostitution. And it was really fascinating to see what a court case is actually like and being the juror. And I learned a lot by the witnesses that they brought in, the police that they brought in, the testimony about that, call it an industry or underworld of prostitution, especially in Bloomington, which is where the case took place. So the case that I was assigned to as a juror, and I actually got picked, I tried to get out of it. I tried to tell them, well, you know, I have football stuff. I have like my own business and I got football stuff I need to do. And they did not find that compelling at all. And so they selected me for the jury. But the person who was on trial, this was a long time ago, so I'm not breaking any sort of rules about sharing details of a case that I was a juror on. But the gentleman had sort of groomed, if you will, a girl that had nowhere to go and ended up pimping her out and was posted up outside of a hotel. When the Bloomington police, what they did was they posed as somebody who was coming to use the services, if you will, and then met up with the gentleman who was pimping the woman out and obviously arrested him. They got his phone. And once they had his phone, he got a ton of messages that was very clear what was going on in that. And I guess what I learned was, number one, I mean, we kind of just think of that industry as, and I don't know what else to call it, that universe of prostitution is something that's sort of nameless and faceless. And I've always kind of had that impression, like, oh, just, you know, prostitute or whatever, you know, like, I mean, it's not, you don't really think of the people involved in something like that. And to get to know the story of the girl and how she got involved in that industry was really disturbing and kind of haunting. The way that she had been kind of taken off the street and forced to do this, and she was trying to get out of it, but then she was physically abused and all those things. So when this comes up, I think of it, and I know that this was a sting and there's not a person, right? It was, I believe that they were posing as a person, kind of a, you know, to catch a predator type of deal, but it is real. And there are people behind it. And there are in Bloomington and a lot of other places, but with Mall of America and the airport and all those things, a lot of people who are being like deeply mistreated in that industry. So now when I see it come up And I think we all kind of have the same reaction of like, whoa, they got one. Like, you know, we all do that. We all go, whoa, what a salacious story. But I guess now I see it through a different light of there are real people involved and real victims of this that are going on there. And if this story ends up scaring away a couple of people from getting involved in something that they absolutely shouldn't, with the fact that it is somebody that's a public figure, then good. Because everything that they can do to quell that, slow it down, the mistreatment of people. And it also probably gets into an area of, like, why isn't this legal? But maybe we're just not there yet as a society. Maybe only the state of Nevada can get there as a society. We came around on pot, right? I'm not a big pot guy, actually, at all. But I think as a state, eventually we got there with making that legal. So maybe someday it'll be with prostitution as well. But that might be too far out of my range. I just, the way that it's currently constructed is pretty disturbing, actually. So when it pops up in the news, I think, man, if this just keeps a couple of people away from thinking that maybe they're actually texting the Bloomington police and not whatever person on the other side, then maybe it'll be better, because it's a very dark side of that area. So anyway, that was my story. The other thing is about being a juror. It's not exactly like Law and Order, which was sad to me because I love Law and Order, but I'm going to say that it was a little dramatized for television. The biggest difference, everybody goes up and they give their speeches and they, you know, do the whole at the witness box, but they don't get in their face. Like, they don't walk up to them and get in their face. They need to be in the same camera shot, I guess, on TV. But in the real court, they just stand across the room and they just ask the questions.
Are you talking about the testimony, the closing arguments? Are you talking about the testimony and trying to get that out of the witnesses?
So all of it, like the lawyers just stood at a lectern and they just spoke to us for the opening and closing statements. And then they talked to the people in whatever it is, the witness stand, and they talked to the witness stand, you know, people, and it's just across the room. It's not like wandering dramatically back and forth, throwing your arms up in the air. It was more of just like asking questions. And there are a million really small questions, which are like, so tell me what your job is on a daily basis. And it takes forever. But I feel like at the end, I had a real sense for it. Just to the texter, I'm not talking about legal for 16-year-olds. Okay, that obviously. I was not talking about children in legal. That element of it is particularly sick in this case. But no, that's not what I meant. I meant legalized prostitution in the way that it is done in the state of Nevada may be worth considering, when the underworld of what goes on now in prostitution has so many disturbing elements to it, so many people who don't actually want to be doing it, and there's no type of control or overseeing or anything, and it goes down a very bad road of abuse and drugs and all that crazy stuff. That's what I was talking about. Not I'm not saying what the man was setting out to do should have been legal. That's not my point. I meant that maybe someday we'll be looking at like this area. I don't want to call it an industry because that feels weird, but prostitution in general as being something that is organized and has legal elements to it, has laws, has contracts, agreements, all those things. Because strangely enough, the oldest profession has still not gone away. So maybe you could try to manage it like we do with some other things, like I was mentioning, like marijuana. That's what they try to do with that, as opposed to just arresting people and having it be illegal and seedy.
Now, see, 5 years ago, you wouldn't, even though I believe medical marijuana was passed before the pandemic, I think it was maybe 2018-ish, but 5 years ago, you probably wouldn't have said marijuana is an industry in Minnesota. You can say that now. If you legalize prostitution, it may not be an industry now, but it would probably become an industry then.
Yeah, I mean, look,
it's all semantics.
Right. I'm not speaking from a extremely like knowledgeable perspective on the politics of how that could work or anything. It was just my observation, having been a juror on a case that was related to prostitution and human trafficking, that, you know, I mean, it's I get it. I should just stop talking about this and talk about football. I understand.
I will say this. Maybe if someone pushes prostitution as legalizing it here in the state of Minnesota, maybe people will look at sports betting as not that bad and finally pass sports betting bills.
Yeah, yeah. All I'm saying, and of course, you know, texters, I'm an idiot and they're turning off the radio. I get it. Okay. All I'm saying is that I think if you were in my seat on the jury and you heard the details of this human trafficking case, that you might have looked at this and said, you know, this is really bad that this continues to persist. And if there was a way that you could reduce this, because I don't think the interest of concerning people purchasing sex is ever actually going to change. I think that will continue to be a popular thing for people to buy. And as long as that's going to be around and not be legal, you are going to have cases like the one that I was on the jury for, where this pimp had taken someone in, abused them, made them do drugs, made them have sex with strangers, and ruined their life. And eventually, actually, we found out after the trial that the girl had died. They couldn't tell us that during the trial because they thought that would have swayed the jury, but they told us after. So it was incredibly tragic to hear how this went down. And my thought walking out of it was, gosh, is there a way to not have that be the case so many times? But also, hey, if you're the guy on the other side of this, if you're the senator, you're educated enough to know that this is how this goes and you're still trying to participate in it. That's pretty pathetic and embarrassing, too. So that's all. That's all. It just struck me since I had that experience not that long ago. But I am generally known for talking football. Just thought it was an interesting story that I had gone through and then came up today in the news. So why don't we do that? Why don't we take a break? Why don't we ease ourselves back into football and just the not concerning angle we all want to talk about, which is the future quarterback situation and Aaron Rodgers when we return. Matthew Collar, fill it in for Henry Lake. Okay, a little bit of a mixed bag of reaction of me talking about being a juror in a prostitution case not too long ago. Or I guess technically it was prostitution and human trafficking. Another thing that I learned about that, by the way, and I'll get to Aaron Rodgers shortly, but it was a lot of times when there are big cases out in the world and we're all watching them on TV or following them on social media, and then the jury comes back with some sort of result, and everyone on the outside goes, whoa, this jury, how could they make that decision? How could they decide on this, that, or the other thing based on what I saw on TV? And I think what they don't always realize is that there's a set of charges that they give you as a juror. So you run down the different charges, and they have to check off the boxes. Like it has to be proven that the person who is being accused met those charges. So actually, in our case, there was one of the charges that was not met, and we could not really say definitively that that he had done X, Y, or Z, which I think it really shows you how hard that job is to be on the jury, that it's a lot more difficult because if you have to prove an exact charge with an exact phrasing without a shadow of a doubt, that can be a lot more difficult than you think. And then, you know, you get into that jury box and or whatever they call it, the jury room, and there's debates and you're going back and forth and some people get emotional about the case and you're trying to look at it objectively and somebody's got to be in charge. And it was just really interesting to find that out and also get a peek behind the window of how some of the prostitution works, which it was really even just interesting to see how the cops went about it. It seems like in this case, it was a little bit different from what happened when I was a juror. When I was a juror, what the cops did was they had texted someone who was advertising on a website, and they had a bunch of different stuff that they looked for on websites where they could figure out if someone was being human trafficked. So there's like a lot to this of the way that they have sort of scientifically broken down. All right, these are the signs of someone who's advertising on a certain website because they're just interested in finding mutual friends. And then there's other ones that are very clearly someone is kind of being held or being forced to do this. They were talking about photographs and videos that were clearly taken by someone else and hints about, you know, prices and things like that. So there is, I think, with Bloomington police, I know I read their statement today and they were saying, and they've come up with this kind of phrase for themselves. I forget what it is, orange jumpsuit district or something, which is where they're trying to kind of be like, yeah, you mess with us and you'll go to jail. Like, okay. But they were sort of saying like, this is, we're trying to clean this up. And so if you're doing things like this, you should be concerned. Maybe this big of a case of an incident of a senator being arrested for it will make some people think twice. And I hope that even just what I said or other people's stories about human trafficking would make you think twice in general about the person on the other side of this, because they might not be doing it of their own volition. So that's all. You guys want to talk about football? How do I transition to that, Jonathan? That's what I was really supposed to be talking about. Yeah, very carefully. Slowly. Very slowly. So let me talk.
Tiptoe.
Let me talk slowly. So the Vikings have a bunch of new players. You want to talk about them? Actually, I was thinking about last night, not just the Vikings and their big moves this offseason, but I was thinking about Minnesota sports in general. And I'm always taking the pulse of the fans and how they're feeling about excitement levels of the different teams. So Royce Lewis pulls a hammy on the first day. And if you're a Twins fan, I mean, you don't have a new owner. Your team melted down last year. And your great hope of top player who has in the past shown such phenomenal talent pulls the hammy. Meanwhile, the guy they didn't draft had a sub-3 ERA last year and was like a 6-win player for Cincinnati. Like, come on, right? And just every – somebody said that maybe Max Kepler got hurt too. It's like he doesn't even play for them anymore. Just not, even people who were on the Twins are getting hurt. So that excitement level's got to be sputtering at the moment until they actually get games going and we get summertime and there's not a storm coming, which makes excitement for baseball lower. And last night, there were videos from the Wolves game and the crowd and the energy in the middle of that game. Just wow. And like Anthony Edwards has an incredible play. He's pumping up the crowd. And then they blew it. And, you know, Obi Toppin turns into Steph Curry and he's making fadeaway threes. It's just like, what? Minnesota sports doing that thing again? And then the Vikings have this offseason that is just phenomenal. They go out and get everybody. They've got linemen for the first time in forever. They're getting defensive linemen. They're stacking up this roster. Their own guys, they're not leaving. They're staying. And then we got this Rodgers thing that is just hovering over everybody. And I think 98% of the fan base does not want Aaron Rodgers to be their quarterback. They want J.J. McCarthy to be the quarterback. But what can we do? I mean, text line is like, I'm tired of hearing about Rodgers. I know, but what am I supposed to do? Unfortunately for you, the next interview coming up is about Rodgers, because how can we not talk about it? Not only is it redux of Favre 2009, but he's also like the most controversial person in the entire NFL. And the Vikings have not come out and said we're not signing him. And they've just sort of left us all to linger wondering. And no insider has definitively said they're not doing it. So we all wait. And while we wait, Will Parkinson of Turn on the Jets is going to talk with me next segment. He covered, obviously, Aaron Rodgers last season, and I'm curious if he thinks it's a good idea for the Vikings to sign Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk about that when we return. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. All right, the rumors will not go away. The Athletic has been reporting that the Minnesota Vikings are mulling whether to bring in Aaron Rodgers, and yet there have been other reports, including Adam Schefter, that the odds are not high of the Vikings signing Aaron Rodgers. It's hard to figure out what's going on because the Vikings have not come out and said that they're not doing it and that it's J.J. McCarthy's team. So we all continue to stay in a holding pattern. And while we're there, a man who covered Aaron Rodgers last year, Turn on the Jets podcast, Will Parkinson, joins us now to discuss Aaron Rodgers last season, the fit potentially with the Vikings. If you can hear it in my voice, I don't love it. But Will, how does it strike you when you hear the Vikings and Aaron Rodgers?
It makes me feel like Aaron clearly wants the Vikings, if you believe both the reporting, but also if you try to read the tea leaves of, like, the Giants have been out there for, look, Rodgers got, we knew Rodgers was getting cut over a month ago, and he could start talking to teams. And a lot of these teams knew where they were at, right? I think Pittsburgh went through their due diligence with Fields and wouldn't guarantee him the second year or any part of the second year. So he obviously moves on to the Jets, which I know this sounds biased, but like the Jets are a better situation for Justin Fields than Pittsburgh was. They turned to Ross. They clearly want Aaron, right? This has been, or there's at least a significant mutual interest between the two sides. The Giants have been out there for over a month. And the Vikings weren't really talked about much, I don't think. I think there was a little bit of like the joking, hey, are we doing this all over again? And I was like, cool, let's do this all over again. Because the last time the Jets were good and I got to like witness playoff games was when the last time this happened. And the Vikings obviously made it to a title game and like everyone knows the deal. So yeah, it did kind of work out for both sides. This is where I don't get particularly what's like Rodgers wanting the Vikings makes sense. They have the best weapons. They have the best offensive head coach. He's playing inside for 10 plus games a year at a minimum. All these things add up. Although Rodgers has talked a million times about how he hates playing on turf, but whatever. Like there is a lot of the reasoning makes sense for Rodgers' sake. And I guess if you're the Vikings and you think to yourself, I just don't get, like, you could have brought Sam back and run him back this year. And then, like, if Sam sucks, you pull the cord and JJ, and, like, he reverts back to a pumpkin. You go to JJ. It just makes me think they don't love JJ quite as much, or there's something off there that why would you even entertain it if you love JJ? Because he had the year off, right? He had the year. I know he didn't get the practice and the whole thing, but it was a kind of a dream scenario. The Vikings developed themselves into a contender. They spent a ton of money this offseason on some good players, some players maybe I wouldn't have spent money on, but it doesn't matter. Like, they should be a really good team next year. Detroit should be worse. Green Bay, we're not sure. Chicago's better on paper, but what are they? Like, well, you could pick the Vikings to win the division and with JJ and not even know who he really is. So, again, I get Aaron's point of view. I just, from the Vikings' perspective, I'm not sure what the, like, it's the opposite, I guess, of the Daniel Jones thing, which is like, we're so arrogant that we can make Daniel Jones good because we did it with Darnold, which I don't know, I wouldn't have done either. But I just feel like, if you like JJ, you play him. And if you're like, damn, we messed up. The knee's not right. Something's off. We missed the value. Then, like, you could have gone after a lot of other guys. We just kept saying, I don't know. I'm very confused what the thinking is from the Vikings' perspective.
Well, that's what I've been trying to work myself through over the last couple of days is what would be the reasoning on their side if it's not that JJ McCarthy's recovery is problematic in any way, which Kevin O'Connell did tell us at the combine that he is in line to start the offseason program and everything. So he didn't give any indication. There was no like, hey guys, you need to be a little bit cautious with JJ still recovering. Like, and I think he would have done that if there were some problems there, but maybe there are. If it's not that, I think it's two things. Number one, Kevin O'Connell is terrified of ruining his young quarterback. He's talked about this a number of times, even last year, like, hey, let's not start a quarterback controversy with Darnold and McCarthy because we're developing him on my timeline and how I think he's going to be ready and so forth. Coaches are also very cautious about this. I wrote today about how the 49ers tried to get Brady out of retirement instead of Purdy, and then Purdy took them to the Super Bowl. How about Nathan Peterman starting over Josh Allen in week one of 2018? Like, we see this all the time. Your guy Tyrod Taylor starting over Justin Herbert. Herbert comes in, throws 30 touchdowns in his first year. It happens a lot where these coaches, they want to play it safe if they can. And the other thing, too, I think it's just about Aaron and the fact that he is an NFL icon. He's one of the best of all time. But you can tell me better, because you watched every game. Yep. Sorry. What is there? What is still there? Because on paper, it hasn't looked good since 2021.
Yeah. Look, the numbers at the end of the year look fine, right? A lot of them. Some of them don't look good. But, you know, we can – the touchdown, interceptions, yardage, yeah, it's fine. Like, he's still a good player. No one's – I'm not sitting here telling you he's not a good player. When he's healthy, which was at the beginning and the end of the year, he was awesome, like, in a lot of ways. Caveat. His numbers were awesome. The Jets beat one team that was not terrible last year. They were in a million games, and they blew it at the end of pretty much every game. They led NFL history for most, you know, chokes, if you want to call it that. You know, six leads in entering the fourth quarter and lost six of the eight games. Insane. Rodgers had five or six fourth quarter comebacks, ball in his hand to try to go win the game, either down by a score or tied. It happened like once or twice. They were successful. My issue with Aaron is more so I thought his Achilles got much stronger as the year went on. He looked more mobile at the end of the year when the calf post bye, when the calf was healthy, the knee was healthy. I mean, he played through a torn calf this year. He played through a sprained MCL, I think, or something like that. Like he was legitimately hurt, and he's a super tough dude. And like, for all you want to say about Aaron, like he always has been like that. He's always played through injury, and he like won't miss time. And he did come back from the Achilles faster than anyone in the whole thing. But it's a calf injury now, 3 years in a row, to some extent. He had the thumb. He had the ribs. He's taken a lot of abuse over the years. He's a 20-year career. He's one of the three or four best players I've ever seen play football at the quarterback position in the NFL. He's probably two for me. Like, he's that – like, I think of him that highly. And when it's on, he's still got it. Like, the Patriots game this year, week three, I don't know, 300 yards, three touchdowns, like 70% – like, it's still there. We saw at the end of the year – again, I keep emphasizing this. It is still in there. Like, you will see if he's the Vikings quarterback in 2025, 5 to 7 really good games, like MVP level-ish Rodgers, three touchdowns, no picks, the whole thing. You'll get 6-ish games that are, like, fine. Like, the numbers aren't terrible, but missed a lot of gimmies, and you're just like, eh, like, it's not great, but, like, you figured it out. And then there'll be 5 or 6 where he looks terrible. I think people didn't watch the Bills game in week 17 this past year, where it's the worst game of his career, bar none. He was benched. The whole, you know, a lot of the guys were benched, but Rodgers was benched, threw two picks. He missed like three open touchdowns. He took a safety, essentially. He got a personal foul penalty. Like, it was terrible. And it comes back week 18. Miami has nothing to play for. Tyreek Hill quits in the first quarter, and the Jets, you know, throws four touchdowns, and like, it was fun, right? It's like a fun, like, I thought that was it for him, and I thought that was a nice way to go out. Got 500, the whole thing. The arm strength is still 95% there. Like, he can still rip it, and he still has some tight window throws and can still throw it. The deep ball accuracy is not great. He just gets rushed a little bit now. I just don't think he trusts his legs as much as he used to. People forget, and Vikings fans won't forget this, but like, Rodgers was like Mahomes before Mahomes, where it's extending plays and the creativity and like the trust with receivers. I'm sure Justin Jefferson will put up 2,000 yards next year and have 199 targets. Everybody else won't really eat, because it's like Aaron kind of just like goes to his guys now. And like, that happened with Devontae, and they don't have to deal with that. But the mobility is not the same. It is in spurts. Again, they'll have moments, but it's not a full four quarters of MVP level Rodgers. And if any level of your team is not, you know, 100% locked in that game, it's just really hard. He doesn't overcome an issue or two in Green Bay. For all those years, it was like the defense isn't great, but Aaron's going to put up 28 to 30 a game. This is more like 14, 21, 26 some weeks. They just put up 30 points like one time this year, and they lost. And I don't know. Like, Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams is just as good, if no offense, better than Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Like, I'd probably pick – I might pick the Jets duo just on paper. Breece Hall's better than Aaron Jones. I mean, like, if you want to start – the Jets offensive line was good. Like, there's no reason it shouldn't have worked. My biggest concern for the Vikings, and this is a thing that I'm sure you've thought about a million times, Aaron changes the play a lot at the line of scrimmage. He wants the perfect look, especially as he's gotten later in his career. He doesn't move quite as well. He wants to make sure protection is like 1,000% spot on. And like, he knows exactly where he's going to go with the ball pre-snap. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing always, But Kevin O'Connell's kind of like, this is my show. I'm one of the best coaches in the league because of what I do, especially on the offensive side of the ball, playing, calling plays. Is Aaron going to come in and learn an offense that's very similar to the offense he ran in Green Bay, that he had a huge issue with motion and these different person? Like, he went to the Jets to run the Aaron Rodgers 2010 scheme, and it didn't work. So I guess, you know, my point is just like, how does him and O'Connell mesh, one thing? And then two, I know he'll be fine mentoring JJ, but he has no equity in it. Like, he mentored Jordan Love because he wasn't going anywhere, and it was like going to be a year-over-year relationship. This is like, he might be around JJ McCarthy for six months, and like, it's, I don't know. I just, this doesn't really add up to me, other than on the field, Rodgers is a better product as of March 17th than we know what JJ McCarthy is.
Right, and I think uncertainty always drives these coaches insane. But just to go with some of the things you said about stylistically, I think the NFL has changed a ton while Rodgers has been here. We used to see Brady and Manning, they would go up to the line of scrimmage, they would ID the defense, and they would call out Omaha or something, and then they'd change the route. But offenses are working a little bit differently these days, where there is a lot more motion and there are a lot more changes. And also, defenses are not showing their cards like they used to. I mean, I could sit at home and watch a game from 2010 and say, oh, it's zone. Oh, it's man. Oh, that's where they're sending the blitz. They weren't hiding as much as they are now. And you see this from Brian Flores all the time. And Rodgers was mostly a disaster against Flores's defense. Well, where is this trending in the NFL? More toward Flores or more toward 2010? Of course, it's more toward where Flores is really showing a lot of different things at the line of scrimmage and then changing once the snap is taken. And that's what KOC's system is designed to actually battle against. It's more of, like, I think they call them progression reads or whatever you want to call it, but it's more of looking to spaces as opposed to trying to read the defense. That is very different from what Aaron Rodgers has done for his career. And looking at the numbers from last season, it's exactly how you described it. It's a handful of games that are really spectacular, and then a handful of games that there's total no-shows. And if you're the Vikings, this is my thing about bringing in Rodgers. If you bring him in, you have to be playing Super Bowl Sunday, or it's a disaster, because you didn't find out anything about JJ McCarthy and you just let him sit on the bench. And then you also brought the circus to town and everything else. If it's anything short of pure greatness and excellence, and if he had nobody at receiver, no offense to Robbie Anderson, but he was like the best receiver Sam Darnold ever had. And that's not the same as this. These were good receivers. It was supposed to be. That's what we forget, because everyone can go, oh, well, it's the Jets. The Jets were talked about as the team that somebody wanted to be on. Oh, they're a quarterback away. And then now all of a sudden we're going, well, it must have been their fault. I don't think that the Vikings offensively offer something that's crazy different than what he already had. That's why I just can't really make this fit, man.
Yeah, look, I think when Nate Hackett was the OC, sure, like, that's a drastic difference. I'm not telling you that Hackett is who's the worst offensive coordinator in the league. Was not a difference. The Jets struggled in the red zone. And again, I keep coming back to, like, the fit in Pittsburgh makes so much sense to me, right? Like, he gets to play the Jets next year. He can do that. He gets to play Green Bay next year, the AFC North. While, like, we talk about it, like, it's the, you know, the hardest conference ever, the hardest division ever. Like, Cincinnati is the worst defense I've ever seen. Cleveland stinks. The Ravens choke every January. So, like, you kind of go, oh, Mike Tomlin's a good coach, but he's not on the offensive side of the ball. So, like, he's not dealing with it. Arthur Smith's a good offensive coordinator at points, I guess. But, like, you could – Rodgers has more validity. So he could, you know, maybe change some things he wants to do. The Steelers' offensive line, again, not great. But, like, Pickens and DK, like, can he just hit them on crossers and go balls the whole season? And, like, the defense is good. Again, like, on grass field, in the cold, it kind of just fits the Rodgers mantra a little bit. Where I'm struggling is the Giants make no sense, other than if you want to just make the most money. And, like, yeah, the Giants on paper have gotten better, but Philly, division, Washington, even the Cowboys, like, the Giants are just clearly the fourth team, at least at the moment. Unless, you know, whatever. Yeah, even if they got Travis Hunter and Malik Nabers out there, like, cool, who's blocking? The Vikings, again, on paper, makes sense, right? Like, for him. I just feel like, I don't know. I just really just don't even know if the culture fit makes sense. Like, Rodgers has never really been spiteful towards like the organ. He's been spiteful towards like Gutekunst and like those guys, the upper management of Green Bay, but like never any bad blood with like. They just did a documentary, and like the Packers were extremely involved. Like LaFleur's talking in the documentary on Netflix, so it's not like Favre had like a lot of other things. And the Vikings again made sense, and Brett Favre kind of turned back the clock after the torn bicep, so you can start to make those comparisons. And if he doesn't throw the interception against New Orleans, like, hey, are they playing the Jets in the title game and in the Super Bowl? And like, we're having this crazy conversation. I just go back to like, what's the best case that happens for them this year? Rodgers is what we thought he was going to be this year. So he's a top eight quarterback. The Vikings are one of the top five seeds, right? They're either the one seed or they're, you know, whatever. We just went through this with Sam. And if you don't make it to at least the title game, it's probably a failure. And then now JJ's in year three. He's never played like at all. And you're kind of doing you're hoping you have the Jordan Love year three breakout or year four, but Jordan Love kind of sucked the first like 8 weeks, and then the Packers dug themselves out, and like it went well, but they lost in the divisional round. And then this past year, like they got smoked in the wild card. You know what I mean? So I don't know if JJ is going to be the guy. I really don't. I didn't love him coming out, but he showed some stuff in the preseason last year. You know, you hope a year under O'Connell. Sam's obviously a great dude. Like, I'm sure he answered a ton of questions for him. And I think the Vikings ceilings may be higher with Rodgers for a year, but I don't know. You've invested a lot in JJ. They traded up for him. You know, you let Sam walk out of the building. Even as much as I don't love Daniel Jones, you let Daniel Jones, who you brought in, you could have brought Daniel Jones back. You didn't. So either it's all smoke with Rodgers and he just wants more money from Pittsburgh and the Giants, or I feel like, and I think you feel the same way, that he's really hoping Minnesota says, F it. Let's do this thing for a year. But Aaron's also said, like, I want to play 2 to 3 years. So it's like, what is it? You know, that there's just too many variables to me in this. The Vikings culture last year, I felt like, was so strong. It helped them. Aaron's not a culture. He's not a bad guy, and he's not a bad, like, teammate. It's that if Aaron's going to come in and be tail between his legs, I'm going to run Kevin O'Connell's offense, and I'm okay if it's bad in week six and I get benched, like I'm gonna take my medicine. That's a different conversation. If we're talking Rodgers is a certified 17-game starter, no matter what, I'm running my offense, I'm changing out of Kevin O'Connell's plays, nah, I don't know if I'm necessarily on board with that one.
Will Parkinson there from Turn on the Jets. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk more Vikings offseason later on in the show. And coming up very shortly, Jess Myers to talk about the Minnesota Wild as well. Lots of sports tonight. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. You know, the other day I said something on social media. Why would I ever do that? I posted the weather report for the last week, and it had snow tomorrow, and it had 70 degrees 2 days ago. And I said, make it make sense. Make it make sense. Why is it like this?
Welcome to Minnesota in March.
That's what every single response was. Yep. Oh, are you new here? Like, no, I'm not new here. I am certainly familiar with the ways of March in Minnesota. My point is, why? Why does it have to be this way? Like, what causes it to be this way? I don't understand weather at all. I need the chief meteorologist or Paul Douglas or somebody to explain to me how in the world we can go from just the other day, the wife and I are going for a jog together and it's 70 degrees and I got a t-shirt on and shorts and I'm just out there enjoying summertime. I got out the golf clubs. I went out back and I've got a golf net in the back and I'm whacking golf balls and I'm thinking this year's the year. We're breaking 80, baby. And then 2 days later, I'm supposed to be shoveling snow. What if I refuse? What if I refuse this storm? No, I don't accept it. It's not happening. I'm not taking the storm. I'm not shoveling. I'm just going to pretend it's not there and we'll see what happens. It is frustrating though. I mean, especially if you're a person that likes baseball and you're trying to get jacked up for baseball season and then you hear, oh no, actually there's going to be a big storm. But I get the impression that by the time the baseball team returns to Target Field, we should be okay. I don't want to say in the clear. We're never in the clear. But we should be able to
never get, till Memorial
never.
Day.
Never. No, definitely not. But at least, you know, they should be able to start the season and all that sort of stuff. But you get that little teaser, and it's the worst. Every year it's the worst. I would have preferred. That was a great day for me. I had a lot of fun. But I would prefer, no, don't give me the teaser. I don't even want it. I don't even want the 70-degree day. I just want incremental, slow improvement into summer. But Minnesota can never bring us that. So be careful tomorrow if you are driving to work and there is snow.
I'll talk to the Jetstream about that.
Can we'll you see please? What the,
yeah.
Can you please?
Got it on the hotline.
Rocky Mountains, what can we do here if they're involved? Anyway, Jess Myers, the Pioneer Press, covers the Minnesota Wild. We will talk hockey when we return. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake.